This is a prose section following the last poetry section. George, on the bus, I had half dozed while listening to conversations. A blurred picture of Claire spread on a bed, filling my closed eyes with a cruciform whiteness. Why was it always still at first the Maria Cross position? My sleep brain put a scarlet labial line in the middle of the white, and the image was something like we'd seen once at a London exhibition for Turner's nude female drawings, where it seems a relief to him that the short dash of colour between the heaving elements is at last exquisitely sexual. The volcanic plains outside the bus window had no such vaginal or volcanic declivity, though I'd read that a couple of centuries ago a lava crater had still bubbled here. The rocks sprawled to the horizon and were not yet smooth. They were large dark grey chips with axe edges. There was no visible people except for occasional Syrian army tanks and a few stubborn wandering Bedouins. Kirill was talking to an old man about reincarnation. The Druze didn't usually like to discuss the topic as it was sacred for the community elders, and the younger Druze, like those Claire and I knew in Mount Druitt, were embarrassed as well as intrigued by it. Kirill was easy to confide in, though. His refined deference would have made him a monk in another Russian century, and the Druze man was disturbed by a recent occurrence. Since I, like him, was old and had accepting eyes, he included me as well in his confiding. Kirill had asked him if he knew of Emily Nahida. He had heard of her as her mother had sought for information widely. All had expected her to be suffocated by the white helmets in Idlib as propaganda against the Syrian army when they and the Russians arrived, but the unexpected new arrangement with the Turks had changed predictions. I said, when it's available, the Russians will always prefer a golden bridge. That's what Kutuzov called his allowing Napoleon's French to retreat from Moscow. Kutuzov preferred a decimated France as his direct enemy rather than a triumphant sea power like Britain. Kirill laughed with enthusiasm, and my friend George here is always quoting A.J.P. Taylor that of course in politics the impossible always happens, but you must tell him more about Emily Nahida in reincarnation. Her mother said that when Emily Nahida's father died in the car accident, she felt his spirit pass into the child in her womb. That as Emily Nahida began to walk and talk, she knew things that only he would be able to remember. She asked to return to Al-Safa, and that is why her mother brought her. Her mother told everyone that is why Emily Nahida must not die. God would not inflict such a double grief on her, especially as Emily Nahida must have come to Al-Safa for a reason. As a maternal PR exercise for retaining public interest in an individual kidnapped child, it seemed to me quite admirable, and it might be true. When Claire was first pregnant, we discussed which of our lost relatives might be reincarnated in the baby, as the horror of it seemed to make a live birth more reassuringly likely. And fortunately, Corbin was just Corbin. At our destination, I found Claire, and she told us to go straight to a cave in the hills before the Az-Suwaida Syrian army offensive against ISIL began the next day. Before that, the Syrian army had negotiated the freedom of the remaining hostages, but the snuff director was something of an independent agent and might still have immediate artistic ambitions. Claire insisted, "You must free Emily Nahida now."